Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, everyone. On behalf of the Tattered Cover Bookstore, it's my pleasure to welcome you and to thank you for supporting your local independently owned bookstore. When you buy your books here, thank you. When you do buy your books at the Tattered Cover, you enable us to continue to bring you programming like you're about to enjoy tonight. T.R. Reid is a longtime correspondent for the Washington Post and has served as their chief of the London and Tokyo bureaus, as well as a commentator for NPR. He also served as the lead correspondent for the frontline documentary Sick Around the World last year. And while the reform of healthcare is in this country is at the forefront of debate, Mr. Reid shares the insights that he gained about how other industrialized nations provide universal healthcare in his new best-selling book, The Healing of America. We're delighted that T.R. Reid has returned to the Tattered Cover. Would you please join me in making him feel welcome?
Hi, everybody. Thanks, Charles. What Charles didn't mention is that, yeah, I'm a longtime correspondent, but I'm a long-time customer of Tattered Cover and a huge fan of Tattered Cover. And along with Charles, I just want to thank you all for supporting your local independent bookstore. This is a huge community resource. We all know that. And I feel that independent bookstores should be covered by the Endangered Species Act. You know, they need our support. And I remember, I don't think they do this anymore, but for years the Denver Post used to run the slogan every day, "'Tis a privilege to live in Colorado." And I believe that. I think that's absolutely true. And if you think everybody has her own list of what's good, but if I were to list the things that make me feel privileged to live in Colorado, they would be, let's see, a powder day in the back bowls, a cold Coors at the ballpark with Todd Helton coming to bat, that drive through Glenwood Canyon, the most dramatic 20 miles of the entire interstate highway system, and a pleasant afternoon browsing at Tattered Cover, one of the great bookstores in America. That's what I'd say. So I'm grateful to you for supporting this store. I urge you to buy a book while you're here tonight, and, you know, maybe I have a book in mind that you might... this is the nitty-gritty for an author. I really love the Tattered customer as a reader, but as a writer, these Joyce's stores have sold scads of my books over the years. And also, this is fairly unusual. The Tattered Cover is one of a relatively small group of select independent bookstores that are surveyed by the New York Times for their bestseller list. And I think they're the reason that I have made that list, which is good for me. And tonight I'm going to talk to you about this new book of mine, which deals with, a question that's pretty important for Americans. Here's what I tried to figure out. Look, the fact is all the other countries in the world like us, and I mean by that advanced, free market, industrialized democracies, all of them provide health care for everybody of high quality, and they spend half as much as we do on health care. How do they do that? How do they do that? That's what I set out to find in this book. And you know what? I think I nailed it. I think if you read my book, you'll see how they do it. And I'm not going to give it all away here. You have to buy the book. But I'll tell you some of the things that I didn't find when I went around the world. In the first place, it's not all socialized medicine overseas. Lots of countries cover everybody with good quality care with private docs, private hospitals, and private insurance. In fact, you'll see in my book, I argue, I'm sure I'm right, that several countries are less socialized than the United States. It's not all single payer. Single-payer plans work very well. They're fair and they save money. But, you know, Japan has 3,000 different payers. Germany has 220 different payers. Switzerland, a country about the size of Colorado and New Mexico combined, has 70 different insurance plans, and they're doing fine. They cover everybody and spend a lot less than we do. And then another pretty important thing, they're not all the same. This is really important. The notion that you get overseas and it's all sort of big government nanny state doing the same thing, no, that's not true. All the other developed countries face the same kind of problems that we do, you know, aging population, high-tech medicine saves a lot of lives, but it's expensive as all get out. And they all have to make these decisions about what procedures and drugs to pay for and which ones not to. And the interesting thing is they all come up with different decisions. They face the same choices, but they reach different conclusions. I'll give you an example. In my book, I talk about some countries in their basic, you know, prescription plan, in their basic health plan, cover Viagra, and some don't. And it's kind of interesting, the decisions. So, you know, we lived in Britain, and we were in the National Health Service, which is a good healthcare system, but it's kind of stingy. There's a lot of stuff the NHS won't pay for. But for some reason, the Brits do cover Viagra. Why would that be? I know what you're thinking. No, the real reason for that is it was a British scientist who invented Viagra. And they're proud of this guy, so they're going to put his pill on their formulary is basically the rule. But you go 25 miles away across the channel, and the French system doesn't cover Viagra. For some strange reason, yeah, that's exactly right. For some strange reason, some men in France still buy it, but they pay out of pocket. So I was in the health ministry in Paris, and, you know, I'm a reporter. I got a checklist of questions, and I'm going down my questions, and here's question number 38. Why doesn't your system cover Viagra in the basic drug formulary? The Frenchmen, they do not need a Viagra. So we find all these things, and there's lots of different answers to the same questions based on national culture and history and whatever. As I said, my book is, I'm so happy, it's selling like mad. The publisher's happy. We're all pleased. I'm sure that's because it's so brilliant and beautifully written, but timing may have something to do with it. Let's admit that. It may be good timing, and I wish I could say to you that I decided early in 2006, I looked ahead and said, gee, I think in the fall of 2009, our country will be incredibly interested in health policy, and that would be the good time to bring out a book on how other countries, nah, it's sheer luck. In fact, I was a year late on this book, and my editor's been beating up on me for a year to finish it, but now, of course, I tell her, hey, Ann, I saw it all along. So, and in fact, if you want to know where this book came from, I think it actually started about 15 years ago. As you may know, my wife does international investment. I'm a foreign correspondent, and we've lived in different parts of the world. And 15 years ago or so, we were living in Japan, and here's what happened. Every year on my birthday, I got a letter from Shibuya-ku, which was my local government office in Tokyo. A totally Japanese letter, Japanese in every way. And here's what it said, Rido-sama o tanjoubi omedetou gozaimasu, which means, highly honorable Mr. Reed, please accept our humble congratulations on the august occasion of your birthday. This is how they talk in Japan, you know. And then it said, and may we respectfully suggest that you find time in your busy, important life to have your honorable body checked in an annual physical exam. And if you do this within 30 days of your birthday and bring this letter, it's free at any hospital or clinic in Tokyo. So I'm thinking, whoa, you know, this is good healthcare. And I actually wrote in the Washington Post, you see, that's what happens when a healthcare system covers everybody. They have an interest in spotting diseases early, and they give you, and I did this physical every year, and it was a good one. I mean, you know, they made you drink the barium, and they did all this other disgusting stuff, you know, and it was quite a good physical. I was impressed. Anyway, Subsequently, we moved, our family moved to London. And, you know, London has, everybody is in the National Health Service. It's, I thought it was a very good health service. They wouldn't give me an annual physical. And I used to say to my GP there, you know, in America, I ought to get an annual physical here. In Japan, they gave me one every year for free. No, no, we don't do that. We don't think it's worth it. It's not cost effective. They just made a different decision. And the reason was, when you went to the doctor in Britain, she did all the stuff that's in an annual physical anyway. You know, she took your urine and she took your blood and she tested everything. The reason for that is, as you may know, I explain this in the book. In Britain, the doctors are paid for keeping patients healthy. They're not paid for doing procedures. In fact, the doctor's paid by the number of people who've signed up to be on that doctor's list. Most of them have 1,800 or 2,400 people. They don't want to see you. When I used to go see my doc in Britain, he would say, don't come back, you know, watch what you're eating, you know, and, you know, don't do this and get some sleep for a change. You Americans work too hard, like that, you know, because he was going to get paid whether he saw me or not. He had an interest in keeping me healthy. So he did all those tests anyway, and the British system just wouldn't give me an annual physical. The most striking thing for us about the National Health Service happened when we were in Japan about, I mean, in Britain, about 4 days after we moved to London. I'd say the second day we moved to London, Peggy and I were taking our kids around to show them the new, this new town. I don't know if anybody's done this, but if you move teenagers to a new country, they say, you're wrecking my life, you know? And so we were trying to demonstrate to them how wonderful life was going to be in this vibrant, wonderful town. And our whole family was over in the Camden Town section of London, which is pretty grody, bohemian part of town. Camden Town is where Bob Cratchit and Tiny Tim lived. And it's still about the same. And one of our daughters goes into some, you know, downscale, dusty, rusty jewelry store and buys a pair of brass earrings. The only flaw was she didn't have pierced ears, but of course this jewelry monger says, no problem, mate. Clip, clip, and pierces her ears and sells her the earrings. And can you imagine what happened? 2 days later, Willa woke up, and her ear is swollen red and oozing pus and quite painful. We had now been in this country 4 days. We're living out of boxes. We had no idea where the doctor was. So we went out and got in a cab, and the cab took us to our local hospital with St. Mary's Hospital. It's on Parade Street, right next to Paddington Station. And this is so London. This is so classically London. You go in the front door of St. Mary's Hospital, and there's a brass plaque there. And it says, in this hospital, in October of 1928, Sir Alexander Fleming invented penicillin. You know, and that's true. It happened right there. Very British. Everywhere you go, you know, you sit in a pub and, you know, and John Milton drank in this chair, you know, kind of thing. Everywhere you go, that's true in Britain. And we went in and, you know, it looked like it hadn't been painted since 1928. I mean, they don't spend money on physical plant in London. They have good care, but, you know, their buckets catching the dripping rain and everything. And we made our way to the casualty ward. That's the ER in a British hospital. And a very prim and efficient woman came over. She's the chief nurse of the casualty ward, and the chief nurse in any British hospital ward is called matron. And matron has this perfectly starched white outfit on, and matron was a pretty smart woman and figured out instantly which of these five Americans needed help and took Willa by the hand and took her in a room. And what did we wait, 15 minutes or something, not long, and a doctor came in. And we were just waiting outside, and, you know, they drained the pus and cleared that wound and gave her a stern lecture about hygiene. And Willa came out smiling. She was cured. You know, she is, and you can imagine how her parents felt. I mean, this is a wonderful feeling. So I went over to matron's desk, you know, and pulled out my checkbook. What would it cost in an American emergency room? $200-$300 for the room, $100 for the hospital. They would have done a couple of tests. $500 or $600, you would have then had 2 months fighting the insurance company over who pays the bill. And matron says, oh, no, 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 you may put away your checks. You see, we do it differently here. You don't pay for health care. You pay. You pay in taxes, but not at the scene. And Peggy and I kind of turned to each other and said, boy, there are different ways to do healthcare. Countries do this in different ways. And, you know, I could write a book about that. I could tell Americans how this works, was the thought. That was 1998. Then here's what happened. While we were in London, the European Union really got its act together and came together. They launched the euro, this new currency, which has been the most successful currency in the world since they launched it. And it was clear that Europe was now more united than any time since the Roman Empire. This is kind of an important story for Americans. So I wrote that book, The United States of Europe. I think there it is. Tattered Cover sold a bunch of that book, too. And it was a serious book about a serious issue. And an amazing thing happened with that book. It was just astonishing. I think it's due to Tattered Cover. But anyway, it became a bestseller. And one day, Peggy and I were sitting at home in Denver, and my literary agent called me up, you know, are you sitting down? You know, fasten your seatbelt. You're number 10 on the New York Times list. You know, we never expected this. Quite astonishing that this would happen. And then Gail Ross, my agent, said to me exactly what a literary agent should say at that moment. Exactly. She said, what's next? And I said, what's next? First, I'm going to buy champagne, and then I'm going to take a year off, you know, and live on my royalties here. And Gail, you know, she's into this tough love thing, and she says to me, you idiot. You fool. She says, with luck, you'll be on the bestseller list 3 weeks, maybe four at the most. She exactly hit it. You got to sell your new book while you're a best-selling author, she says. What do you got? What's next? And I said, you know, I had been thinking about this book about how other countries do healthcare. You know, they manage to cover everybody and spend less than we do. Done, she says, let's do it. I didn't realize how hard it was going to be. It's a complicated topic. It was a hard book to do, and the travel was good, but it took a lot more work than I had planned on, to be perfectly frank. A couple of good things happened along the way. While I was just getting started on this book, I had made some documentary films, and I got a call from a producer at PBS Frontline. Says to me, would you be interested in working on a film about healthcare overseas? Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me. I'm interested in that topic. I'm writing a book on it. And he said, well, I'll tell you what we need. So I'm thinking, well, he's going to say we need an experienced foreign correspondent who's articulate and good-looking and all that. No, he says, we need a guy who's got a chronic health problem. Well, as it turns out, years ago in the U.S. Navy, I busted my shoulder, and that's as high as that shoulder goes. This one's fine, but this one. And I said, yeah, I've got a really stiff, painful shoulder. Yeah, I'll call you back. Anyway, what they were doing was they were making a film about Ayurvedic medicine, which is an ancient Indian kind of medicine. And we were going to go to a clinic. We actually went to the Mayo Clinic of Ayurveda, the greatest place for Ayurveda in the world in southern India, and see if it worked. And so they needed a chronic ailment that Ayurveda could treat. And they called the clinic and they said, oh, man, traumatic arthritis. We're great on arthritis. You know, we're better than Western medicine arthritis. So it worked. So I went there with this film crew to make this film. And basically, here's what happens in Ayurvedic medicine. The core of it is massage. They massage you with warm, medicated oils 3 times a day for 5 weeks. I mean, it was sweet. You lie on a dark table made of neem wood. It has to be neem, otherwise it won't work. And 6 guys pour warm oil on your body and massage the heck out of you. It was great. And then your masseuse gives you a shower to wash the oil off your body. That also was pretty good, you know. So it was terrific. And PBS Frontline made that film. It's called India, A Second Opinion. And it actually starts right here in Denver with an orthopedic surgeon in Denver. And actually, you wouldn't want to. You could buy the DVD of that film. I think I get 2 cents if you buy it, but there's no reason to do that because you can stream it free on the Frontline website if you're interested in Ayurvedic medicine. Anyway, this movie was shown on Frontline, and even now, you know, these PBS stations, they're desperate for stuff. So it shows up at 2:30 in the morning now and then, you know. And here's what happened. Ever since that movie was on, people come up to me on the street and they say one of two things. They either say, "How's your shoulder?" or "I saw you naked." Many nude scenes in that film. And then while we were making that film, I mentioned to the people at Frontline that I was working on this book in which I was trying to focus on other rich, developed democracies to see how they provide health care and why they can cover everybody. And Frontline said, "Whoa, we could make that movie." So we made a movie called Sick Around the World, where I go to five rich countries to see how they do it. And that film you can also stream for free, and I guarantee you, in that film, I keep my clothes on at all times. And then the third event, somebody just asked me about this. That was a pretty successful film. And so then Frontline said, "Well, we'll make one about the American healthcare system." And so we set out to make this third film called Sick Around America. And I worked really hard on that. I mean, we worked months on that film. And basically, you have to shoot about 60 or 70 hours of tape to get a one-hour documentary. And the 60 or 70 hours, that's my job. And then the editors and the producer go to Boston, that's where Frontline is, and, you know, edit it all down to a one-hour film. So they did all the editing and then sent me the movie, and I looked at it, and it was wrong. Just as a matter of healthcare policy, I thought it was completely wrong. We go around America looking at healthcare, and at the end of the film, they go to the lobbyist for America's health insurance industry, and she says, "Yeah, the way to solve this is let's pass a law saying everybody has to buy private for-profit insurance from our companies." And then she says, "That's what they do in other countries." No other country would allow anything like American for-profit health insurance. Many other countries have private health insurance, but they don't have our kind of product. I say in my book, in other countries, the insurance companies have to cover everybody. They have to pay every claim. They can't turn down a claim. There's no, you know, in-network or pre-authorization. You go to any doctor, any hospital, any chiropractor, anything, and insurance has to pay. And generally, they have to pay pretty quickly in Switzerland. If they don't pay your health care claim in 5 days, next month's premium is free. Now, that's pretty good health insurance. Health insurance, private health insurance can work, but just not the way it's done in America. So I objected to this. They didn't want to change their movie. I didn't want to be in the movie that I thought was wrong. I was really stressed about it. I mean, I had a book coming out. It couldn't hurt to be on TV talking about health care. And my wife, Peggy, said, "You can't be in that movie. It's wrong. Isn't it wrong?" And I said, "Yeah, it's wrong." And she said, "Well, doesn't it contradict your book?" "Yeah. You can't be in it." And I, maybe. And Peggy said to me, "Look, if you're doing the right thing, how bad can it be?" Pretty good advice, I felt. And I stopped. I dropped out of that movie. It was not a good movie. It was pretty badly condemned. I'm so glad I did. And God, every night I thank my wife for telling me not to be in that movie. She was right about that. So and then the book came out. And I think largely because of the timing, as I said, it's really done beautifully. I just want to mention one thing about book reviews. If you look at this marvelous, marvelous bookstore with thousands of titles, only about probably fewer than 5% of the books in the store have ever been reviewed. And the reason is, at least in any kind of major publication, because the newspapers and magazines just don't have room to review all the books that are reviewed in America. So only about 5% ever get reviewed. Now on the net, there are a lot of reviews on the net now, which is a boon. But, you know, in print, not that many. I don't have this problem because I tend to write books about, you know, fairly serious contemporary social and political issues. So my books do get reviewed. The problem is, it's kind of amazing how often the book review editors assign my books to some blockhead who can't see the brilliance, you know, who doesn't understand. I have gotten some bad reviews, and I'll tell you, one thing about authors is we remember all the bad reviews, and we remember all the good reviews. And I'll tell you right now, the best review I ever got, there's no question about this. I wrote this book when we were living in Japan. I wrote this book. It was a guide to Japanese skiing, as you know, because the Winter Olympics were in Nagano in 1998. We thought a lot of foreigners might be coming to ski in Japan. So I wrote this book called Ski Japan. They sold that in tattered cover for years, too. It's an English language guide to skiing in Japan. And one of the newspapers in Tokyo, the book review editor is thinking, I got to review this book, and let's see, I need somebody who can read English, and I need somebody who skis, and they hired me to review my own book. No, this is really true. And I laid it on thick. It's the best review I ever got, you know. Put it right up there next to War and Peace, I said, you know. So that was a good review. But I will say this. Fortunately, I'm very pleased to say that the reviews for this book have all been great. All the reviewers kind of understood what I was trying to do. The review in yesterday's New York Times was one of the, probably, except for Ski Japan, was probably the best review I ever got. And that's a good feeling. You know, I'm sure you've all, it's like a, you know, it's like in a performance review or something at work. You work your brains out and you'd like somebody to realize that you did. So that feels good. So, and one of the things I really like about the reviews of this book is everybody has figured out, although I'm quite critical of the American healthcare system, everybody has figured out that at its core, it's a pretty optimistic book. It's quite an optimistic book because what I say is we could fix American healthcare. We could cover everybody at reasonable costs with high quality care. We could definitely do that. But what you have to do is you have to decide that you want to. What I found in every other country, rich country, is they first decided on the goal. Doggone it, we're going to provide health care to everybody who needs it. And once you make that moral commitment, and it's a moral commitment, to cover everybody, then you can find a mechanism to do it. And so I'm pretty optimistic. If we could make the moral commitment, which we have never made in our country, to cover everybody, I know we could do it. In fact, look, I'm not going to give you a pass against buying the book. You still have to buy the book, but I will now summarize my book for you in one sentence. You ready? If we could find the will to cover everybody, the other rich countries could show us the way. That's my book. Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.